get the slide. Oh, sorry in the back.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us tonight. We are pleased to welcome back our special guest. He's here tonight for a discussion and signing of his new book, Words of Radiance. Please welcome best-selling author Brandon Sanderson.
I'm sorry, guys. I could make those fly really well last night. Tonight, they're not flying. There's a little card thing. Did anyone go in costume? You are in costume. All right, we'll give you one. Anyone else in costume? Look at this. This is great. Nice. Even with the... and with a sphere? You guys ought to check this out. I am so happy to be here, guys. Thank you for coming out to see me. What we're going to do is we're going to do my standard thing, right? I'm going to talk at you for a while, and then we'll do a Q&A, and then I'm going to read something. I haven't quite decided what I'm going to read yet, but I'll find something to read to you, something that hasn't been published yet. So, Words of Radiance. It's been 4 years since the first book. Well, 3.5. I am so sorry about that. I kind of had a little thing I was doing. It was called The Wheel of Time. And it's this bizarre thing to like actually hold these books in my hand. Because I started writing the first book when I was 15, right? I started writing what was a thing called Dragonsteel, a story about Dalinar, his brother with a king had died, and he couldn't decide if he'd take over the kingdom or if he should let his young nephew take over the kingdom. His young nephew was not very good at being king, and this conflict of a kind of a good person trying to decide if he should take over a kingdom was a really interesting conflict for me, and it stuck with me for years and years and years. And now actually being able to write books about him is super awesome. It's just incredible. This book, the hardest words to write in this entire book were actually the three on the front. Because years ago, I sat down and I outlined the Stormlight Archive, 10 books. And part of the goal of the Stormlight Archive was to have each book have a character as a theme, where all the characters were going to be important to every book, but you would get a sequence of flashbacks from this character's viewpoint. What was happening to them in the flashbacks and in the modern day would shape the narrative and give us a heart, a soul for the book. This was one of my attempts. I love epic fantasy. This was one of my attempts to take some of the things that sometimes in epic fantasy hold it back, or that I've seen great authors do things with the genre, but in some cases they also have things that make the book start to, you've noticed this, that sometimes wander. And my idea was I wanted each book to have a really strong theme, which would force me as a writer to make each book have a strong narrative. So we didn't run into this sort of half books that sometimes happen. And I don't want to speak ill of people like Robert Jordan, because I can only do this because I've read Robert Jordan, right? I'm standing on the shoulders of a giant saying, in some of those middle books, and I even heard interviews where he said, I think I would have done something different if I'd been able to do it, but do it over. And I said, well, I can do something different. And so I want each book to have a character theme. And this book was going to be Shalom's book. And I named all the books in my original write. We have Shalom's book, we have all of these things, and this book was going to be called, you're already laughing, it's named after this book that Shalom has given at the end of the first book. It represents, scientific discovery. It's this book that can never be filled. It has blank pages, and every person is supposed to add their knowledge to it and increase mankind's knowledge, and it's called the Book of Endless Pages because it can never be filled. And so it's this great thing, and I was going to talk to my agent. I'm like, yeah, the book's going to be called Book of Endless Pages. It was actually my editor. Yeah, I was talking to my editor, and he laughed at me. And he said, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's great. Isn't that great, Kelly? He's like, do you really want to have a target that big painted on your 1,000-page-plus book, Brandon? And it was the first time. And, this title was in my title for years, and it's the first time I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of funny. You get this weird thing as writers, right, where it becomes something to you, and you start to ignore all the other, associations. My very first book that I published was actually the sixth book that I wrote. It's The Launchers. Well, when I was writing it, I was taking linguistic classes and developing this really cool linguistic for it that I was super excited about. and I was creating the aeons, which are the symbols in the books, and every name is going to be based off an aeon. I designed one that I called Ego, which was going to be, about the city and things like this, and I ended up calling the book The Spirit of Adonis, which is actually written Adonis. And those who know Greek mythology, as soon as I handed this to my test readers, they're like, your book's great, but what does it have to do with Greek mythology? I said, Greek mythology? And they're like, yeah, Adonis. And I looked at my cover, my title page, and said, oh, this is a word. I actually made a word. I do this a lot accidentally in other languages, but Adonis is one that you know. It's actually a part of Greek mythology. I've done it in other languages. Ellen and Strop are both words in German, I've been told. I didn't know that. I was just looking for words that sounded good in German, and I guess I did a really good job of it, because they're both words. So, Words of Radiance, as Book of Endless Pages, I've never been able to see that really is kind of funny, that an enormous book was going to be called the Book of Endless Pages. And so, I spent a while thinking and realized, yeah, I'm going to have to rename this book. I can do that. I can rename a book, right? Oh my goodness, it was so hard. I spent months sending things to my editor and having him say, no, that doesn't really work, does it? And I'd be like, no, it doesn't really work. And he'd send something back to me, and I'd say, no, that doesn't work either. He's like, yeah, that doesn't work either. And we spent forever coming up with these three simple little words. And coincidentally, I didn't really get the ending until I wrote the ending. And the things that were happening in the ending, I finally had a light bulb moment, which is nice, because sometimes as a writer, you're really waiting for one of those light bulb moments, and you're like, oh no, what happens if I don't get one? Neil Gaiman described writing a book once. You've heard this if you listen to Writing Excuses. It's my favorite. Writing a book is sometimes like jumping out of an airplane with a ball of yarn and trying to knit a parachute before you hit. And every time you work on a book, there's this little piece of you that's like, what if the magic doesn't come together this time? What if it doesn't manifest? What if things just don't fall, come together? Because even though I talk a lot about writing, even though I'm a, self-styled expert on writing or whatever, and I have the podcast and things like this, I teach writing at a university, even with all of that, there are parts of this process that are still magic to me, which is good. It's part of what keeps me writing. But what happens when a book comes together, I can describe after the fact how it happened for that one book, but there's a piece of me that says, no, I don't know how. Everything, just like I really think that someone who is playing the piano and has practiced this majestic piece can really say at the end of performing it, saying, yeah, I know exactly how that happened. No, you don't. There's something magical about all that practice coming together and it working. And every time I get one of these books and it does work, it feels so good still. It feels wonderful. Once in a while it doesn't work. Fortunately, those don't get published. I've got a few of those that are still in the drawer somewhere waiting for the light bulb to strike. Anyway, it's thrilling to me. It's wonderful to me. I'm glad that you can read Words of Radiance or the Book of Endless Pages, which is not quite endless, but if you didn't hear it, it's the longest book that my publisher can physically print, because what happens with book pages is we fold them into things called signatures. They take one big sheet and they print a bunch of things on them and they fold it together and you can look at your book and they staple them or sew them in or glue them in signatures, they call them. And we use every slot for a signature in the publisher's binding facilities in this book. They could actually, no more pages could be added. You're holding the longest by page count book that Four Books has ever published. And they have the largest publisher of science fiction and fantasy in the world. So that's pretty awesome. You don't have to clap for that. Someone's like, I'm going to clap. I'm not sure if I should clap. You can clap, though, for Michael Whalen's art. These end pages, as I understand, now Michael Whalen's my favorite artist. I love his art. He's amazing. I got into reading science fiction and fantasy because I picked up this gorgeous book called Dragon Thing, and I absolutely love that. And unknowing, I went and looked for other cool books, and I found Dragon Prince by Melanie Ron, and I'm like, this cover's awesome too. And then the McCaffrey books, these covers are awesome. They're all done by the same guy. And I didn't know the same person was doing the covers back then, but I soon realized that if Michael Whalen had a cover, then that's a book I probably wanted to read, because the publisher was willing to to pay for a lot for the cover. And Michael Williams is very hard to get these days as an illustrator. He doesn't do a lot. His fine art sells so well, he doesn't really need to do commercial work. He can do his fine art paintings. But on this, he was did this piece of art. He was reading the book. He called up the publisher and says, you know, I really feel that since it's Shalon's book, it doesn't make sense that we don't have a picture of Shalon in it, so I'm painting you an end page. Kind of in a, you don't get to choose, but you will pay me for this because I'm doing it. And so he went and painted this extra page for us to stick in the front because he felt like there should be a picture of Shalon in the book. With me not knowing, with nobody really knowing, and him just calling and saying, we're going to do this, so deal with it. So that's why you got these awesome end pages. The original intention was to have the same end pages that were in the first book through all of the series. And now it looks like we've set a precedent. We're going to have to do something awesome every one. So happy accident. Let's go ahead and do a Q&A. You guys go ahead and ask me the questions that you are just dying to hear. If you can't tell, I will talk at length. Go ahead, right in the back.
Will you hear anything about
Aiden Alston throughout the series? You want one of these? Can you come up and get it? So, for those who aren't aware, all my books are connected. The epic fantasies are connected in some way or form. They have continuing characters, the same characters that, you know, there's a character from Elantris that showed up in The Way of Kings, and there's a character from, you know, anyway, it's all interconnected. And so, yes, you will find out more about what this is or who this was. As the series progresses, and there's a little bit about it in here. So, all right, who else has a question? All right, right here.
Okay, one of the things that interests me about this and the Way of Kings is how different, like, the setting was, the underwater feel, the crustaceans, what made you decide on that as opposed to the more typical forest areas?
Okay, so why did I choose to do Way of Kings in this kind of bizarre setting instead of a more standard setting? Excellent question. Here you go. Nice matte swag, by the way. Oh, awesome. Okay, so I have this sort of thing. I love fantasy books, right? I grew up reading them. I enjoy them a great deal. I still read them quite a bit. Sci-fi fantasy is my thing. But in the late 90s, I kind of felt like epic fantasy in particular hit a bit of a rut. And I'm not talking about the established authors. They were doing awesome things. Like, you know, one of the things I love about The Wheel of Time is The Wheel of Time really evolves as a series as you read it. You know, it starts off as this quest fantasy, which is very classical, like the 80s fantasy, but by book four, it becomes something completely different. And I feel like he moved as the genre moved. But in the late 90s, a lot of the new writers were either trying to be Robert Jordan as he'd been 10 years ago, or they were trying to be George R. R. Martin. And they, instead of like really blazing new ground, and I don't blame the writers, I really blame, you know, the industry only publishing them. I'm sure there were great writers trying to do other things, but me as a reader, I just felt the heat. I'm like, this fantasy should be the most imaginative genre. It should be the genre of the most distinctive, the most different, the most amazing genre out there, because it is the only genre where you can literally do anything. Even science fiction has more bounds than fantasy does. And yet, why are we always in the same worlds, with the same cultures, with the same sort of stories happening? This should be the genre of the most imaginative stories possible. And so as a writer, one of my mandates to myself was, I want to try and push this boundary. And I'm sure the next generation will push it even more, or will react against me, but I was reacting against what I read. And so with the Stormlight Archive, which is the series I developed, to be my kind of opus, right, was the one where I wanted to, when I was developing it, I wanted to push the boundaries of fantasy cultures and settings as far as I felt that I wanted them to go. And so the reason that's there is because I wanted to do it that way. Now, not every book is going to be like that. For instance, Mistborn, as a kind of modernist take on the fantasy genre, needed to be slightly more normal of a setting, because I was trying to play off the idea of the hero having failed, which needs some of that basis, that foundation. And so I did the whole Ash and Mist thing rather than changing the culture quite so dramatically. But you'll find me whenever I'm writing something, I want to go places I haven't been before. That's why we read fantasy, right? Go places we haven't been before. And so if every fantasy is going the same place, it gets kind of repetitive.